It's O'Neill Outside. On News 95.5 at AM 750 WSB. For fishing and hunting or anything in the great outdoors, O'Neill Williams is your guide. Let's go outside with O'Neill.
Good morning, boys and girls, from Black Powder Headquarters and the Bojangles Studio high in the mountains of North Georgia. O'Neill Outside presents Real Tree Radio. Welcome to a brand new unused Saturday morning. Hey, we've got another hour of outdoors headed your way. It's 6 after the hour, and it's a very, very special Saturday morning because we've got some special things all lined up for you. It's my pleasure to tell you that this program is brought to you every Saturday morning on the Sports Broadcast Network across the country and on WSB and 95.5 FM. Brought to you by Tough Shed, Striplings, Horsetown, Real Tree Camo, Hayes Auto Dealerships, Fire Aid, Timbuktu Outdoors, Cherokee County Toyota. My goodness, what else? It's a whole long laundry list. Works Tools, and of course, the Whitetail Institute. It's 7:30 after the hour, and we've got a very special hour coming up, and we hope you'll join us. Because, well, I'll let Woman Williams introduce that to you after we have a call or two. I'll let the Woman Williams introduce that very special caller. How about that? But if
Sounds
you'd like
good.
To join us this morning, it's 404-872-0750-800-972-8255. We have the Silent Hero Award at 525 and the Medal of Honor at 440. So we've got a full half hour of outdoors and interesting calls for you this morning, and we appreciate you joining us. 404-872-0750 or 800-972-8255 nationwide, from the Sports Broadcast Network from Sacramento to Houston and Dallas and Pittsburgh and Philadelphia, St. Louis, Little Rock, Columbus, and all over the country. 81 stations carrying O'Neill Outside every Saturday morning for you, with those following sponsors attached, and we're so proud of that indeed. So Matt Farr will be calling in pretty soon. Then we have a very, very special call coming up after that. So this is O'Neill along with Woman Williams, Karen Green, Brian Green, and Jason Byers, and we'll be back. Welcome back, 12 after the hour. This is O'Neill, Saturday mornings, 4 to 6 a.m. And you can get us on Facebook all at the same time. We still have fun doing this, but I can tell you, it's losing its edge a little bit from time to time. So what do you think of that?
Why?
Because I'm tired of getting up at 2:30 in the morning.
One day a week, whiner.
Okay, well, I'll stop whining about it.
Good idea.
Okay. It's out of character for me to do that.
Yes, it is. Yeah, yes.
Well, I'm trying to be entertaining for a few moments.
Oh. Okay. That's what you call it.
Jason, do we have Mac on line 5? Can you tell me? There he is. Now, for the Ram Fishing Report, and for Lake Lanier and other lakes around, we need Mac to be on line number 5 if we can. Good morning, Mac. What do you say?
Neil, how are you?
I'm doing fine, thank you. Jason is looking after me down there in engineering, or else I will foul up. What's going on at the lake and all around the southeast?
Well, the fishing's very typical for this time of year. A lot of places, the bass fishing is tough. Typically, in the dog days, early September, the bass really scatter out. A lot of them suspend, and you work hard for your bite, especially those bigger ones. And with spotted bass, it's worse. They're more prone to get out over open water areas and suspend, really tough to target. So if you're going bass fishing today, you're going to have to work hard. On the near, if you'll fish some of the deeper humps that top out about 35, 40, you probably catch a handful of nice fish. Throw a spoon through timber. Same thing, you catch a few nice ones, but be prepared to move a lot, fish hard, and pay attention, because you're not going to get many bites. You need to make them count.
That'd be for North Alabama, East Tennessee, the Carolinas, and Georgia.
A lot of those fishermen are going to experience the same thing today. And now, on the other hand, the striper bite's good. We haven't gotten cool enough in most of our lakes to initiate the turnover process. Mm-hmm. So we've got a good summertime bite, great trolling bite, good live bait bite, power reeling. You know, the whole key with power reeling, usually you have to have some density. The fish have to be bunched up. If you get in that situation, power reeling is a good technique. So typical summer techniques, mm-hmm. still producing well, and fishing's good. So, yeah, striper fishing, it's worth taking a day and going.
Well, it's a good report and not necessarily a surprising one.
No, it's very – we're right where we should be, normal That's for right. change. How about that?
Well, the Ram Fishing Report worked this week like it always does. Mac, I thank you so much, good sir.
Nope,
and,
my pleasure,
you have a are you fishing today, sir?
I'm getting ready to crank the ram up and go right now, brother.
All right, I'll see you soon, pal.
Have a great weekend, everybody. Enjoy it. Be safe. Have fun. Catch fish, shoot deer.
Mighty fine. I'll see you soon. Now, very special caller this morning, and here's Woman Williams to introduce Hank.
Well, of course, we're talking about our favorite Yankee, Hank the Yank. Good morning, Henry.
Good morning, Gail.
How are you this morning?
I'm doing well. First of all, I think we should talk about how it came about that we're going to talk about what you were doing on 9/11. It's been a really raw week for all of us. It's always tough when we have a 9/11 anniversary. And then we've got Hurricane Florence, and 9/11 had just been on my mind a whole bunch. And a friend of ours, who is also in the boating industry, had posted something on Facebook, and it was a wonderful little video. I had never heard this story, and it's called "The Heroism of New York's Boaters in the Face of 9/11." Well, I know from conversations in the past that you were there on 9/11. You saw more than you ever wanted to see that day. So yeah, I'd like for you to first of all, I want our listeners to know what you saw and what you did, and then we'll talk about the boaters after that. But what were you doing up there on 9/11, Henry?
Well, I was up, believe it or not, I had a business trip. You know, I'm a part-time guide, so I was up because Walmart was visiting New York for that week. So it was what we call in the clothing business, it was Walmart week. So I had flown up on the day before on 9/10, and I was planning on being there for 2 or 3 days. My appointment with Walmart was on 9/12. So I came up, and as I always do, I stay in Brooklyn, New York, where my mom is still living. And that morning, I had rented a car when I got into New York, and drove to mom's house, hung out that night, and then went to work on 9/11 as any normal day. Got on the highway, went through the Brooklyn Battery Tunnel underneath the East River to get into Manhattan, and came up the West Side and passed the World Trade Center in about maybe a half a mile or less. I get a phone call. It's my wife calling me on the phone and saying to me, "Where are you? Where are you?" And I'm like, "Calm down. What do you mean, where am I? I'm driving to the office." And she goes, "A plane hit the World Trade Center." And I'm like, "What do you mean?" So I put on the radio, and I looked behind me through my rearview mirror, and I saw a lot of cars bunched up, and I stopped, pulled over, looked on the side, and you could just see smoke bellowing out from the World Trade Center, because I had only just passed it, like at, I don't know, maybe it was 8:50 in the morning, 8:52 is about 10 to 9, give or take, when I had driven by, if I'm not mistaken, the World Trade Center. So I had gone up a little further, and at that point, Fluffy called me up, and we were talking about it. But the radio said that they thought it was a small, you know, just a small little, you know, four-seater. They really weren't sure whether it was a big jet or a small plane. That was what the original newscast on CBS radio on the New York AM dial, their 500 watt, you know, 500 their clear channel station. Got up to the parking lot and parked my car right off of 6th Avenue, where I always do, and on around 27th, 28th Street, and was walking up to my office. And
let me interrupt you. How far away were you from the World Trade Center at that point when you got out of your car? like miles?
I would say I was probably about, 28th Street. I'd say I was about 1.5 to 2 miles.
Okay.
But 6th Avenue, you have to understand, in Manhattan, as you know, because you've been there several times, the avenues are seven cars wide. So you just see when you're on an avenue, you can look, you know, New York runs north and south, the city. So the 6th Avenue runs south to north. And when you look down 6th Avenue, that was the one avenue in New York City where you'd see a clear shot of the Twin Towers.
Mm-hmm.
You'd see straight down, and you could clear. I mean, it was just, you know, like looking down a gun sight. It was straight ahead of you, maybe 1.5 miles down. So those things were bellowing up. And when we got out to the street, there was just people all over the street just staring and looking. And one of the towers was obviously, you know, smoking and on fire. Mm-hmm. And as soon as I got out, I stopped and looked back down south at the other tower. I noticed another plane, and I'm like, geez, why is that plane flying so close to the World Trade Center? And we saw the second plane hit right after that, and it was just a terrible experience.
You saw that ball of fire that hit the second tower.
Yeah, we saw the second one hit. It was terrible timing.
It was. And then we can only imagine the thoughts that were going through your mind at that point, but... So we can move along with the end of the story. You did something pretty heroic yourself that day. So just quickly tell me what happened. You got a phone call from your cousin.
Yeah, I have a, my whole family's up there. And long story short, I have a first cousin whose son was a special needs child. So he was going to a school for children with special needs, and they would bus him in every day from Brooklyn into Manhattan. And when right after they realized that the planes were both terror attacks, they immediately shut down the city and nobody could get into the city. So my cousin could not go into the city to get his son. And so he called me up. He had heard that I was in New York and asked me if I could go to the school and pick up my my little cousin who's 8 years old. And so I had to walk about a mile.
Excuse me, Henry, we need to go to a break. I want to hear more, so you stay right there, if you will, please.
Okay.
This is O'Neill. We'll be back.
I could tell that it was over.
Okay, we're back, and we're talking right now. We're talking with Henry Cowan, our fly fishing friend, and he's telling us about his firsthand experience in New York City on 9/11. And when we left off, Henry had already seen the second plane hit the Second World Trade Center tower, and he has a little cousin who is trapped in the city. So Henry did a very nice thing. Go ahead, Henry. Tell us what happened.
Well, I had to walk about 1.5 miles in the city to get to, to get to Gabe. And I finally got him, and then we had to walk back 1.5 miles to go get the car because we had the car parked, and there were no places to park. I mean, they were funneling everybody out of the city through the north end. You couldn't go, so I had to get back to Brooklyn where I lived and my cousin lived. So we finally got in the car, and what would normally take, you know, on a normal, typical busy day might take 45 minutes to an hour to get back to Brooklyn. It took us over 6 hours that day because the all entrances into Manhattan, especially, and going, you couldn't get in, but all entrances leaving Manhattan, you had to go out from Midtown North. So in other words, the Brooklyn Bridge was shut down, the Williamsburg Bridge was shut down, the Holland Tunnel was shut down, the Battery Tunnel was shut down. The Midtown Tunnel was shut down. You got out basically either heading up the Washington Bridge or over the 69th Street Bridge going into Queens. And that's what it was. And when I got Gabe home, and Gail, I've told you this story before, my cousin came running out of the house and basically nearly broke a rib by hugging me. He was so happy to get his son back. So it was a pretty scary day. And I got to tell you, Gail, to this day, I can watch 9/11 documentaries, but I really can't watch the planes hitting the tower. I can't do it. I just can't watch it.
it's kind of a PTSD thing, I'm sure. And then before we go into the boaters, I'll say you were telling me the other day that this little boy that you rescued has graduated from high school now, and he sent you a thank you note for a graduation present and told you to and thanked you for saving his life. I thought that was so sweet, you know, because gosh only knows how long would he have been there if you hadn't been there.
You know, we don't know. I'm assuming the school would have had a have kept him overnight somewhere, or maybe somebody would have taken him home possibly. I don't know, but they were not allowed. You know, like I said, it didn't matter what the circumstances were. Nobody got back into the even the trains weren't going into the city.
Right. Were cell phones working up there at that point?
You know, they were, but it was you know, we had a lot of in and out of network problems that day because there were so many people jamming up the networks. It was you know, my mom was real nervous, and you know, the time she was 71 years old living on her own, and you know, everybody was wondering if there was any sort of you know, chemical attack to go with it. And it was just a stinky experience. You know, like I said, I can watch Pearl Harbor footage, but this stuff really, you know, the crazy part was everybody, if you didn't know somebody directly, you knew somebody who knew somebody that lost a friend.
It was
that close up there. You know, we all had friends that were fire, you know, first responders or people that worked on Wall Street. And so it was, you know, it was a tough day.
Well, that brings us right into the why I called you the other day. I had watched this video on Facebook, and the video is called The Heroism of New York's Boaters in the Face of 9/11. It's a video that's on Facebook. And so I had never heard about this. I knew there were boats in the water and things like that, but I never knew exactly what that was. So can you briefly tell us, because you knew some of these guys that were rescuing people in boats. So tell us what they did that day.
So, you know, there are a lot of ways, long story short, there's a lot of ways to get into New York to get to work. And one of the, in the last 20, 25 years, one of the ways to get into New York is to take a fast ferry from either Staten Island or Jersey or Sheepshead Bay, Brooklyn, instead of having to, you know, slug on mass transit like a train or a bus. They have these fast ferries that take you down into Manhattan, and most of them drop you off at Lower Manhattan, some at Midtown. And right after 9/11, there were so many people that could not get off the island, that were on the south end of the island and had no place really to go. They'd have to walk 2 or 3 miles to hopefully maybe more to find a way to get off the island. And so they made a call out for boats to come and help ferry people off. So not only did the fast ferries go, but where I grew up in Brooklyn, New York, right near Sheepshead Bay and Coney Island is where I grew up and where I was staying, there was a fishing fleet out there called, you know, like headboats, like where you go out and you get on a 100-foot boat and 60, 70, 80 folks who don't know each other could go fishing for bluefish or striped bass or porgies or blackfish. Well, a call came out, and all the headboats from Sheepshead Bay made their way around Brooklyn under the Verrazano Bridge into Lower Manhattan. And those ferries of little boats that were fishing boats became, quote, like sort of like our little Dunkirk, if you will, to ferry people off the island.
That was amazing. These were fishermen, right?
A lot of them were fishermen. Most of them were fishermen.
How about that?
Yeah. Most of them were fishermen.
Well,
so I'm sorry.
I was going to say that had to be quite a sight to see that, because in the video it looks like there's 200 boats around there at least.
Yeah, they did. It was that's one of those untold stories that a lot of people don't know about. And until somebody, not long after that, it was a few years later, they made that little documentary up. It's about 10 or 12 minutes long.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you really want to get the flavor of New York City, these guys in their thick New York accents were, talking about what they had to do that day with, no regard for themselves. They just, and again, at that time, none of us knew what was going on. We didn't know if there was going to be chemical attacks with all that stuff. We just had no idea. But you know, folks, I will tell you, you hear a lot of things about New York and how tough it could be. But when it comes to when the game is on the line or in the clutch, a New Yorker will always do the right thing. I can promise you that.
I believe that. Well, it's a very touching story about what you went through, and of course, I thought this the one about the boaters was touching too, and they are certainly heroes, just like you were for rescuing Gabriel that day.
Well, I didn't feel really, like much of a hero, but those guys, those first responders, you know, I told you after that what came of this for us in the fly fishing community was that very next day, Tie a Fly for Freedom was born, where a friend of mine that owned the fly shop and I put together a fundraiser in the entire fly fishing community around the country and across the pond, where we raised money for first responders and sent that money directly to many first responders' families. So, and we raised over $15,000 in the fly fishing community. So it was really a nice effort by everyone.
Yes. Fishermen are good people.
Good people.
Yes, sir.
That's your name.
Well, thank you.
And this is a great example. Thank you, Henry.
Thank you so much for sharing your story.
You guys have a great weekend.
You too.
Betcha.
Thank you.
Now, let's, very appropriately, let's go to our silent hero.
And now, it's time for the Ronnie Thames Silent Hero Foundation Award, brought to you by FireAid.
September 15, 2018, description. Jacksonville Fire Station Number 1 firefighters were conducting a training session in a parking garage close to the Jacksonville Landing when they noticed people running from the area. It was an odd sight to all of us. Quite perplexing. The firefighters said a man walked over to them and said he had been shot. At that moment, training, experience, and instinct took over. A few of us tended to the injured guy who approached us, and then the rest of us formed a team and moved across the street to the restaurant from which this guy came. Our active shooting training told us the scene needed to be cleared by the Jacksonville Sheriff's Office before we were to enter, fortunately, and we were quick to act. Some of the firefighters actually entered the active area to begin checking on the victims. This was a scene that none of us will soon forget. Governor Scott had the opportunity to meet with the heroes from the Jacksonville Fire and Rescue who were across the street, and when the shooting began and rushed in to save lives. These brave men and women, and they work every day to help others. We cannot thank them enough. The firefighters added that they are proud to how the department handled the tragic incident. Quote, "We are a station full of tradition. We laugh together, we play together, and today we went as deep into the trenches together as we possibly can go. Together, we leave together, we enter together. One team, one family." The silent hero description and recognition brought to you by FireAid. It's 33 and a half after the hour. Boy, what a morning.
Yes, and last Saturday we had the privilege of meeting a lot of hero firefighters at the Ronnie Thames Foundation banquet.
It was, yes, indeed.
An extremely emotional evening, to say the least.
Yeah, wow. Talk about people putting their lives on the line.
And they had 115 nominees?
Yes.
Yes.
And they started out just a few years ago with like 5. Now they had 115 nominees.
Yeah.
And one of these days I'll take time out of the show to tell you the story of the Ronnie Thames Foundation and the description of the silent hero recognition description, if you will. I'll take time to do that one day.
A lot of people are concerned about Don in Ocean Isle. To let you know, yep, we have not heard from Don. We assume and pray that he's okay. And I would imagine they probably lost some cell towers up there. So,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, communication is at zero.
Yeah.
All right, we need to get out of here for a minute. When we return in about 3 minutes, we will have the Medal of Honor description. We'll be back.
Honor, courage, and strength of character. These qualities are embodied by the recipients of the Medal of Honor. Now let's recognize this week's Medal of Honor recipient on O'Neill Outside.
Vincent Capiano, September, Vietnam, 1967. In response to reports that the 2nd Platoon of M Company was in danger of being overrun by a massive enemy assaulting force, Capiano left the relative safety of the company command post and ran through an open area raked with fire directly to the beleaguered platoon. Disregarding the intense enemy small arms, automatic weapons, and mortar fire, he moved about the battlefield, administering last rites to the dying and giving medical aid to the wounded. When an exploding mortar round inflicted painful multiple wounds to his arms and legs, and even severed a portion of his right hand, he steadfastly refused all medical aid. Instead, he directed the corpsman to help the wounded and continue to move about the battlefield as he provided encouragement by voice and example to the Marines. Upon encountering a wounded corpsman in the direct line of fire of an enemy machine gun position, approximately 15 yards away, Lieutenant Capodanno rushed in a daring attempt to aid and assist. At that instant, only inches from his goal, he was struck down by a burst of machine gun fire. By his heroic conduct on the battlefield and his inspiring example, Lieutenant Capodanno upheld the finest traditions of the U.S. Naval Service. He gallantly gave his life in the cause of freedom.
You made it.
I made it.
He's been very worried that he wasn't going to be able to make it through this one.
I read that at least a dozen times.
Yeah.
To be able to get through it. 42 well, after the hour.
I was going to say, yes, ma'am. Knowing about mortar fire, I had never had that explained to me until I was reading it to our Vietnam friend the other day, and he explained to me about mortar fire. And you think about what he had already been hit with that and was still going.
Yep, and left, even knocked off part of his hand.
Yeah, yeah.
And he kept going. That's a hero. 42 after the hour. Now we're way behind on our calls. Let's shoot for Rick is calling on O'Neill Outside. Good morning, Rick.
Good morning, O'Neill. How are you doing this morning?
Sorry it took so long to get back to you, pal. We had a busy morning. What's happening? Who do you want to go hunting with?
Well, you know, as you well know, I've been hunting with you in Saskatchewan before, and that was a great experience.
Yes, indeed.
But my favorite hunting partner would be my sons and my grandchildren, honestly, O'Neill. There's nothing like spending time with your family in the great outdoors.
That's right. It's one-on-one, isn't it?
Yes, sir. It certainly is.
It's not like going to a baseball or a football game or even playing
a
sport. It's one-on-one, and it's
absolutely
a memorable experience, and I admire your choice.
Well, thank you so much, and thank you for what you do. And we at BPI really love your show and everything, so you take care, buddy.
All right. Glad you called, pal. I really am, Rick.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Now let's talk to Wade. He's in Kennesaw, Georgia, on O'Neill Outside. You're on the radio, pal.
Morning, O'Neill. How you doing, buddy?
Good. I'm sorry it took so long to get to you. We've had a full boat this morning.
It took me forever to get through. I told Jason, couldn't get to an office phone, couldn't do it on my cell phone. And I didn't get through till almost 5 o'clock.
Oh, there you go.
My buddy got one last Saturday evening.
Oh, boy.
The Rays broadhead, and it looked like he shot it with a mortar round, bring up a mortar. It didn't go all the way through, shot it almost straight down right beside the shoulder.
Uh-huh.
And it took off running through some thick stuff, and that arrow just wallered out a big old hole.
I'll be darned.
Nice nine-pointer over, he got permission to hunt first week by himself, then a couple more people going to hunt there.
Well, that's good. It's nice to be successful opening day.
Yeah, he's fired up about that. He went that morning, and turned and went to work. And I went painting, and then we went back over that evening. I was sitting in the truck, 500 yards from him. Right dark, he come out. I stuck him. He said, "Well, let's go to the store and get us Arizona tea and a Coca-Cola and come back and find him." And we found him. It was after dark. I was a little bit nervous.
Well, I'm glad you did. It's exciting to be in the woods, and especially on opening day, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. I'm going to use his computer to send you these pictures I got. We got to download, just haven't seen them yet.
Okay,
but
by
he
all
got,
means,
they
send
some
them
several
to me.
Nice deer over there. I mean, some bigger. They look like Kentucky deer down here in Georgia.
Oh, boy. Well, we went today through some of the great states to hunt for the biggest bucks, and it's quite revealing. Most of them are up in the Iowa, Indiana, Illinois, Wisconsin. up in there, but we got some big ones walking around here too.
Yeah, I was very surprised. Sitting that far from the Mall of Georgia, it's landlocked.
I'll be darned.
And these deer, subdivision deer, they don't get bothered.
Oh, yeah, that's neighborhood deer.
Oh, yeah, yeah. They don't taste no different.
No, they taste better, probably. You betcha. Wade, I'm glad you called, pal.
All right, buddy, I'm going to give a shout-out to my buddy Robbie. He's been my buddy since kindergarten.
Uh-huh.
And his birthday's that dreaded day, but now he was born in 1965. And Robbie's birthday's 9/11. He does great in the work up in Browson. I got to call him and wish him a happy birthday. Maybe I get seen one of the same hunt club together down there near.
There you
not
go.
Not too far from the Redlands. Yeah, maybe there I get seen if I go back to Kentucky. Y'all have a good one. Enjoy your show.
You bet. Have a great weekend,
appreciate
pal.
You, buddy.
You bet.
See you, buddy.
You bet. There, see you soon. Now let's give Richard a try from West Virginia calling this morning on O'Neill Outside. Good morning, Richard.
Good morning. I didn't even know you were talking about deer when I called. I talked about something else. But we have, at least I've heard on the local show here, that we have some big deer in down in the eastern part of West Virginia. Not here where I am in Wheeling. I never heard anything here, but down there, they hide out down there. You got some big deer down in there. You know, one thing that I called about, I just wanted to ask this real fast. I don't know, because I heard you mentioning the sponsors you had. And I just wonder, do you need all those sponsors to make a show like this go?
Yes. Everybody has to get paid. The engineers, the setup. If you could see this room and all the equipment that goes in it at great expense to local management, yes, you have to have sponsors or otherwise some kind of a contribution monetarily to pay for all this. Yes, you have to have sponsors. That is the backbone of the show, other than a program on television or radio, which would be funded by PBS, some kind of a public broadasting system. It's
no,
all
I mean,
operated
I mean,
by
just
money.
All, you had a whole list of sponsors on there. I just wondered if you needed, not that that's any of my business, I just wondered what it really cost to put on a show like this, that you need all of those sponsors to make a show like this go. But, I mean, I don't really have to get into that. What I called about was helgramites. I heard a local host say that it's illegal in West Virginia to go turn over rocks to get helgramites to use for bait. But I didn't hear him say why it is illegal, because I used to do it. I just want to know if you know why it is illegal, and is that nationwide or just in West Virginia?
I don't know the extent of it. I didn't know it exists. But if indeed that is a policy or a restriction by some Department of Natural Resources or otherwise organization, I'm sure it's a very well-founded one. And they probably ascertained that the population of helgramites is worthwhile and necessary to the ecosystem of the stream.
Okay, so apparently it's not nationwide if you don't know anything about it. But
no.
I just didn't hear him say why, and I used to do it all the time, and I just wondered why it's so illegal, but apparently it's not nationwide, so you wouldn't know.
I've done the same when I was a little kid trout fishing in the mountains. Glad you called, Richard. Let's see who's this. We got some other callers here at 49 after the hour on a Saturday morning. And one of the questions I had asked, if these callers are about that, out of this, the all-star television hunters that we've all know about, whom would you pick to go? Maybe in this call is about that, but in any case, we'll talk to Derek on O'Neill Outside. Good morning, Derek. Let's see if I've got Derek on the line here. Derek, you're on the radio, pal, I think.
Hello?
Hello, Derek, you're on the radio. Well, we must not have a good... I'll just put Derek back on... Put him back on... There we go. We'll put him back on hold. Derek, let's try Derek one more time. Derek, you're on the radio, pal. Nope, Derek's not going to work for us this morning. 404-872-0750-800-972-8255. I'm glad you made it downstairs to be on the show. Have you got anything going on Facebook this morning?
No, just a lot of people are concerned about Don in Ocean Isle. And another Facebooker mm-hmm. has a place up there. And so on the northern side. Mm-hmm. And so far, as he can tell from the pictures, they don't have too much damage. But he evidently did evacuate. I don't know whether Don evacuated or not.
He's no dummy. I'm sure he did.
Yeah.
I would, if it was necessary for him to do that, because I don't know where he lived in Ocean Isle, mm-hmm. I'm sure he's gone.
Yeah,
he's no dummy. He's a smart guy.
And our little friend Kathleen, she and her nana stuck it out.
Yeah, well, they're about an hour away from the coast, weren't they?
About 30 to 45 minutes away, yeah. in Charleston.
They're wet. I was remarking, Gail and I were chatting about it, that up here on the mountains, all the clouds and the weather goes from the northeast to the southeast, except this week, and it shows the power and size of that hurricane, that this week all the clouds moved from east to west. What a giant storm. I'm in awe of the size of weather systems and their power.
Look at your call screen over there.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Your people are looking.
Got a lot of calls.
Uh-huh. All right. Well, I'm gonna try Derek one more time.
Okay.
What do you think?
Go ahead.
Okay. We don't have much time, but let's try for Derek one more time. Derek, did you make the radio this time? No, I guess not. All right, let's talk to John if we can. We've got time very briefly to talk to John. Good morning, John.
Hey, O'Neill. I listen to your show every Saturday morning. I'm not a fisherman or a hunter. I was listening to your comments or part about the man that rescued a child on 9/11.
Yes.
On 9/11, my son was living in Northern Virginia, and he walked 7 miles to give blood. And he walked 7 miles back, and his feet were so blistered he could barely stand up.
Oh.
Well, that's why Americans are heroes.
Yeah, he is. His name is Justin. But anyway, I love your show and enjoy listening to you.
Thank you for
very
calling.
Much, and I appreciate you calling. I really
All right.
do. There we go. How about that?
It was just, you know,
okay,
every year you hear more and more heroes, and they're not duplicate heroes. There's another one, and another one, and another one.
Absolutely. I wish... Well, one of the things that Gail and I are planning on doing, we're going to go to New York pretty soon and see that.
Well, we've seen it in each stage, uh-huh. but we have not seen the museum.
Yeah, I like to.
In
I like
its
to
completion.
See the museum.
Yeah, we saw it when it was in Fire Station Number mm-hmm. 10.
All right, I got to go, darling. This is O'Neill. We'll be back.
Depend on it. And we'll be here Monday morning, 4:30 to 9 a.m. for breaking news and traffic and weather every 6 minutes. News 95.5 at AM 750 WSB. Now, more of O'Neill Williams.
I could tell that it was over when her
well,
lips
the show is winding down for the 15th of September, but we do have a chance for another call or two. Let's try James calling from Dallas. Good morning, James.
Good morning.
What's going on?
Can you hear me?
I can indeed. You're on the radio, James.
All right, great. Yeah, just calling in, listening to your program. I'm on my way over to... Truth and Nature Base Camp, and
okay.
We're going to have our cast and blast event this morning.
Wonderful.
And that's basically where we have about 20-25 boys that are in our program, and the idea is to get them qualified for the deer hunts we have coming up in mm-hmm. October and November, and so we'll make sure that they all qualify on the shooting range and for gun safety, et cetera, that kind of thing. So Truth and Nature is a faith-based ministry to fatherless and single-parent boys. And that's
well, you're to be admired. You'll be admired, and those youngsters will remember that all of their lives, and I'll bet you'll have a lot of smiling faces today.
Yeah, we're looking forward to it.
You bet. They'll remember it all their lives and discover a talent that they can hone that will last them a lifetime. That's
Absolutely.
Admirable, isn't it? Everybody can't be the high school quarterback, but they sure can be a sportsman.
Yeah, and I just want to say anybody interested in Truth and Nature can visit our website at truthandnature.org.
Truthandnature.org. I will do that myself today.
Okay, very good.
You bet. Thanks, James.
All right.
You bet. There you go. Well, this is O'Neill Outside for the last couple of hours. I appreciate you joining us. So, Woman Williams, Karen Green, Brian Green, Jason Byers, we all thank you for joining us. Hope you enjoyed the program, and next week we'll be out, so you'll be hearing the same thing again, and that's okay. So you guys keep this in mind wherever you go, whatever you do. If you're too busy to go fishing and hunting and take a kid along and make him smile too, then you're too busy, and we'll see you guys next week.
The whole day just an old sweet song keeps Georgia on my mind.